In this episode, we speak with Dr. Samir Cleef, the founder and CEO of Georgia Immune. Georgia Immune is a private science and discovery clinical stage immunotherapeutic biotechnology company focused on reprogramming immune signaling pathways to redirect the immune system to fight diseases. Dr. Cleef is a pioneer in the field of immunotherapy. He is a medical oncologist, immunologist, innovator, and entrepreneur, as well as a transformational executive in healthcare and biomedical research. Prior to becoming CEO of Georgia Immune, Dr. Cleef served on different academic and leadership positions. He was a National Cancer Institute, National Institutes of Health scientist, and chief of the NCI Cancer Vaccine Section, where he led the development of pioneering immune oncology and cancer vaccines into clinical trials. He is currently a biomedical scholar and holds a professorship at Georgetown University Medical School. I am your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to follow.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of GrowthCap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Dr. Cleef, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It's a delight to be with you.
Thanks, RJ. Good to be with you.
So this podcast is in general about entrepreneurship. We do not delve into biotechnology as frequently. So perhaps for the benefit of the non-biotech portion of our audience, could you explain to us about what Georgia Immune does and kind of its reason for being?
So Georgia Immune is a therapeutic biotech. More importantly, it is a science and discovery company, which means like really on the cusp of entrepreneurship. So it is a company where creativity is at its best because everything we do is we do research, we discover completely new biology at the company, and then we translate this into a commercial product. So it is really very interesting because what we try to do is to develop drugs that can reprogram the immune system to rebalance it for the sake of treating either cancer or autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. And this is how we were able to develop so far 9 that we call first-in-class drugs, which means like completely new drugs with new mechanisms that has not been there before, and taking them into development. And 3 of them are already in clinical, what we call clinical phase.
And the unique thing about biotechnology and biotechnology startups or growth companies is that sometimes you can sell the pipeline. So like, you know, pre-commercialization, you're kind of testing it out. You have data to go off of. So could you share with us a little bit more? You have experience with other companies as well. How typically do you like to develop the company? And is it always an eye towards the exit?
Well, no, it really depends on the purpose of the development of the company. So the eye really is not on the exit. The eye is usually on how we can take the drug that we discovered and developed and invented into utilization of specific diseases or unmet need. This is what it is. Now, exit, finances, all come with that. But from our perspective as scientific founders and as founders and as physicians and as scientists is really to do that, which is now we discovered completely something new in biology, and we believe that this something new can be utilized to solve a problem that currently existing and it doesn't have a solution in medicine. So can we develop that tool, which is that drug from that discovery into finding whether it will lead to that solution. And this is where we do clinical trials. So our really intent, and this is why I said, RJ, our eye is to try to get that drug into patients and see that patient benefit from it. Mm-hmm. Everything else come with it. Like you can either exit, you can either develop a partnership with a large pharma on some of the drugs, on one of the drugs, et cetera. So there are lots of ways to do that from a commercial perspective. But first and foremost, our intent as physicians and scientists is to find a solution at the end for a patient problem that doesn't have a solution.
Mm-hmm. Well said. I was referring to sometimes the economics can dramatically change, meaning the capital required to continue the development and evolution of the drug.
100%. In biotech, as you very well put it, RJ, it's a capital intense. So when you develop a drug, that drug requires a lot of capital to be able to, first of all, develop it into a level where you can use it in human. And then the clinical trials are capital intense. And then if you're developing multiple, then it becomes a lot. This is why there are lots of ways of doing this. But you're absolutely correct. In general, this is one of the things that entrepreneurs that are not in biotech might not get, because entrepreneurs in tech, in deep tech, or in retail, or et cetera, they know that they develop a company, that company breaks even in 2 to 3 years, and then they will have revenue. In biotech, that's not the case. Biotech is a long process. However, again, there is a lot of financial reward on this. If you exit, if you license, if you do partnerships, there are lots of ways to do or go public. And as you know, lots of companies in biotech go public before revenues. Actually, majority of companies go public before revenues because this is the business.
You have a fascinating and accomplished background. You know, it's deep into academia, which, you know, plays well into kind of developing new drugs. Maybe take us back to what first drew you to the field of medicine.
So I was a nerd when I was in high school, but not really. I mean, partly, okay, partly I was a nerd. So I think what drew me into medicine is two things. One, knowing that I was going to do research and I'm interested in research, and knowing that since I was in high school, I used to volunteer a lot. I used to be a Boy Scout. I used to do lots of, I wanted to really do something that also helped people. And the two things that were clear to me that putting those together, maybe medicine could be the field that I wanted to get to. And this is how I wanted to do medicine. And I started medical school directly after high school. It's a 6-year program that you go after high school. So I got into it. Now, did I think very broadly when I was 16-year-old into other potential options? Probably not. That was a path that I picked and I was lucky to fell in love with and feel that this is where I fit. Could it be like if I went into physics, I would have loved it? Maybe. But I think that combination led me to choose medicine.
And then as you're going through your experience as a researcher, as an academic, at what point do you start embarking on entrepreneurial activities?
So looking backward, at the time when you start doing these kind of things, that might not look to you as an entrepreneurial activity. Even when you're a student and start completely something, like start a new student club or new student union from the ground up, right? Utilize some of the funds that the university would give you. So those might not sound at that time as entrepreneurial activities. But when you think backward and when you talk now to kids and tell them what they need to do during their life, I think that was a big part of it, is taking an initiative, taking risk of that initiative, utilize resources from somebody else to be able to make it successful. This is entrepreneurship by definition, right? It doesn't have to be a commercial entrepreneurial activity to be an entrepreneurial, right? But at the end, the reward for the college or for the university or for the students might be completely something non-monetarily tangible. But if you take something out of completely nothing and you start it and it becomes pretty successful, that's an entrepreneur. So I started those kind of activities since I was in medical school, so which is college at that time, and started at least a couple of those big activities that they're actually continuing until today. So those student societies or unions that I started, they're still going. So I would say that, but then during my afterlife of medical schools, when you're a resident, I think it's very difficult to do anything but residency. And then during fellowship, this is where I probably started thinking about other stuff, including starting to think of patenting our work. and patenting our work means taking it potentially into commercial. But I think one of the major areas of, I think, inflection point was when I asked to go to Jordan by the government to build a cancer center and start it from the ground up, which is a non-governmental private cancer center, although it's not for profit. But so that was one major business entrepreneurial opportunity that I started almost from the ground up, build it, and now it became the best cancer center in the Middle East. So I would say these are the early phases of that that really built up more and more until I decided to spin out the company.
You know, one of the questions we like to ask on this podcast is, if you think entrepreneurs are born or made, you seem to have some early signs of entrepreneurship, just the desire to just start things, to create things. Do you think that's something that, you know, maybe you had some history with in terms of seeing family members do entrepreneurial things? Or was it just something unique to you? Or were you influenced by other people?
So look, I'm a believer that talent can be sculptured and developed during lifetime and learned. But to really excel, there are other than that. So when I talk about leadership, I think leaders are born. However, there's leaders are born. There are other non-leaders that are born, which is impossible for a person to be a leader. And there's some in between that they can actually talented. But in general, there are lots of things that are things that you will have it. Now, was I influenced? Yeah, I think there are lots of things that influenced me when I was a kid. So whether the environment that I was developed in, although I grew up in a country that's socialist, so that's the anti-entrepreneurship, right? Despite that fact, I had a father who started a business in that environment and was very successful, which started actually a night school. He was an educator, so he started a night school for languages, right? So that would give you some impetus and thinking process. But I think it's more drive. It's more goal. It's more, if I don't do that and no one else is going to do it, how it's going to be a reality. I think that's the bottom line of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Lots of people think of large things and say, yeah, but I'm sure somebody else will do it. Or, yeah, I'll get to that. But some people have the drive and say, look, I have that idea. And if I don't do it myself, it's not going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, it's a loss. Mm-hmm. So I have to do it. And that's exactly how I made the company. I mean, how I started the company at the first place. Because when I was in Georgia, the cancer center director there, I had almost 100 patents issued or pending. And knowing what happened in academia, which is the cemetery of innovation, academia is not set to commercialize anything, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, some universities are way better than others, for sure. But they wait until like large pharma comes and say, I'd like to license this or that. So I felt like if I'm not going to do it, probably it's going to end. So I decided to take the bull by the horn and do it myself. And my previous experiences in building cancer centers, in building organizations, et cetera, helped me in actually taking that risk. So, mm-hmm.
And in terms of creating a team and recruiting top talent to your company, is that something that came naturally to you? You seem like a fairly gregarious, outgoing person, or is it something that you really worked at?
So since this is not my first gig in building organizations, I could tell you that I cannot count the number of mistakes that I've done during my life in recruiting people. But the most important is to learn from that mistakes. So I would say one of the major areas that I sculptured, or at least I trained in my leadership utility, or what I use in that, is how to be able to choose and build people around me. Since I started, again, you make lots of mistakes, but since I started, my motto in building any team, and that started in my first large organization, which is the Cancer Center of Jordan, is bring people around me that know about their topic 1,000 times more than I do. Without that, there is no success. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you make mistakes in personalities, or you make mistakes after you build the team, you see something you don't like, but you say, well, maybe we'll correct it. And then what you learn is what are the signs that you need to act early rather than hoping that it will correct itself, right? But at the end, as I tell my team daily, here, and we had a meeting yesterday about this. The one thing that you should not be compromising on is the quality of people that you get. If you want to get somebody, you should get the best of the best. And we were so lucky in this company that we really have a dream team. And I'm very proud of. And if I can do anything, if I'm proud of anything we've done at this company, is the team that we put together. Because when I sit in that room and there is a discussion around me, it lifts me. I feel that that discussion is not only exciting me, but also it is lifting my level of productivity. Because you, I mean, those tides lift everybody, right? So your contribution become even more productive and more valuable when you have that team around you, that they give you ideas to lift even more the level of potential contribution.
And maybe this question is very particular to biotech, but when you're recruiting, you mentioned kind of expertise and that someone should know their particular area 1,000 times better. Are there other times where you're looking for other traits? Like, you know, maybe, yeah, expertise is important, but it's also important to have XYZ.
Yeah. So there are three that I follow all the time. One is expertise. Second is creativity. Creativity and risk-taking in creativity. I mean, one of the things that we do all the time in any organization is to say, look, I'm going to put this X amount of fund and I want people to think as crazy as possible and bring me ideas and we'll do them. It may succeed or it may fail. Now, the team need to be convinced that this is a logical idea. So creativity is extremely important. And third is that they can develop synergy, which means they can melt within the pot, which means that people like each other. It doesn't have to love each other and become very close friends, but that there's that mutual respect and mutual thinking process. So what I called the aligned waves. So these are the three traits that I always look when I hire at least the leadership and the middle-level people.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're currently affiliated with Georgetown, is that correct?
Yeah.
What role do you play there? How do you interact with the university?
So I'm a professor there. I have a research team, and I teach medical students and PhD students, and we do research.
Yeah, we recently did an episode with a professor at MIT, and he too also starts companies. I think, you know, there's a lot of synergies there, you know, between academia and entrepreneurship. So what has been the biggest challenge in terms of scaling or building a biotech company, therapeutics biotech company? You have investors currently. Was that an easy process to bring capital in, or did it take longer than you thought it would?
So, I mean, look, capital is always an issue, right? Especially when you fall victim to your success. So we had one drug, two drugs, three drugs, and now we have 9, right? So you start by saying, oh, okay, I'm building a 2-drug company, and then it becomes 3 and then become 9-drug company. And then we have a discovery platform that's producing more. So in this case, you would require more capital. So that's always an issue and you have to be ahead of the game. So I would say that's one issue that's clear. The second issue, of course, is biotech is very complex. So when I say complex, it requires a lot of expertise and talent. So the issue, RJ, okay, fine. So can we just hire everyone? That becomes very capital intensive. I'll give you an example. So if you want to develop something called like the drugs that we take by mouth, they're called, some of them called small molecules. To develop a small molecule, it is a very complex that after you discover the protein that you want to target, which is the protein that you need to fix, you develop this structure that you need to use in human. The number of people that are called medicinal chemists, which are the numbers that will help you structure this chemical entity and how you change one atom from here and one atom from here, et cetera, there are probably 9 or 10 different specialties. So the question is, okay, would I hire all of them or would I hire one and I depend on one? The answer was, from our perspective, none of the above. What we did is we recruited medicinal chemists as consultants. All of them work together at the same place and they are all expert in that small area of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the things that while you're building, you need to really think, should I do this? Should I do that? And how? So those are some of the impediments that you find solutions for. And you say, yeah, that's really the best solutions. Because in this case, I hired people. They're not full-time employees. They're not costing the company a lot. But you know what? I got all the expertise that I need. And this is why we've been successful, as an example. So I think these are the things that where, even if it is capital intense, how can you think of minimizing that capital intensity with higher productivity? So these are the things that I think any entrepreneur, any CEO in a biotech company should think about, rather than doing the cookie cutter. Okay, fine. Now we need to do a small molecule. So we need to hire 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No, there are other ways of doing that. And it makes it much more productive because you can utilize that funds for developing other assets or other drugs. So these are some of the main issues that has been around. Now, the third is location, right? So when I started this, everybody will tell you, no, don't even bother. If you're not in Boston, you're not in San Francisco, you'll be dead. So I'm in Maryland, right? Mm-hmm. I said, no, I'm taking that risk. And Maryland now is one of the best places for biotech. And you know what? We have more talents and less cost. So these are the things that you, as an entrepreneur, you need to just look into the future and see, can I do this versus what's the norm tell you and what the traditional path should be? And as you know, entrepreneurs should be outside that.
We're heading into the tail end of the conversation, and I have two final questions. One is, can you tell us about a person who has had a profound influence on you?
Too many to count. Honestly, really too many to count. I would say, of course, my parents have definitely had lots of influence on me. But, you know, I'm going to give you a very general answer to this. You might not like it, but there is no one person. I cannot name one person. If I name one person, I'll be lying to you, to be honest. There are many, including people I knew or people I did not know. I mean, every single scientist, including Einstein, as a matter of fact, that was completely, completely against the grain or against the thinking of that time is an absolute influence. Absolute influence. The first time Einstein gave his talk, he was booed, right? So this is why I would say there are too many of those, and including definitely my parents, but I'm not going to give you a name because I don't know that name.
So my last question, you know, the answer may be the company you're currently building, but we usually ask if there's a charity cause or other endeavor that you're passionate about.
Yeah, I'm passionate about lots of causes, including hopefully stopping wars and hopefully stopping unnecessary death of innocent people. I'm very passionate about this. I've been working for this all my life, and I will continue to work on this till the day I depart. That's a very, very dear to my heart. I think, unfortunately, these days, that's something that is clearly up front and center, and I'm very passionate about that.
Well, Dr. Cleef, I want to thank you again for taking the time. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you very much, RJ, and lovely to meet you.